Paul, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Very good afternoon, Ruby.
Now, first of all, how exactly can the data from our new devices find its way to criminals?
Well, it depends as to how devious they are, perhaps, or whether they're even already ingrained in those organisations. So when you think about the new toys and devices that we got at Christmas, many of those would have required activation or an account to be set up. And in most cases, that's done via a website. So straight away, your details are being held on computer systems, usually connected to the internet themselves, and usually via a web page. And unfortunately, as we've seen online, there are billions of passwords that have already been stolen or leaked from organizations. And that can include some really big names, even Microsoft themselves with their Xbox platform from a few years ago. So it's quite possible that that new information that was uploaded, which could also include credit cards, could already be in the sights of the cyber criminals.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, to keep ourselves safe from a hacking, you've recommended using password managers in your browser to make sure you have a unique password on each website. Why is that? I mean, are these password managers like still safe to use, or are they at risk as well?
So pretty much everything we do has some level of risk attached to it, but the password managers that most people use themselves are quite safe. Many of them have been vetted by various professional organizations, and they simply provide a mechanism to allow you to have unique passwords for every site or service that you visit. So using myself as an example, I have over 380 different accounts on websites and various services, and every single one of them has a unique password. So the idea behind that is if one website, one service is compromised and my details are stolen, and that has happened, it will only affect that one site. And I can quickly go in and change it for that one service to another unique password. So it's just making it that bit more difficult for somebody to take your Gmail account, for example, and use that password to get into your online bank or to your PayPal account. So having separate accounts just makes it a bit more difficult for the criminals.
Right. And so you've also recommended having a fake identity online. How exactly would that work?
So we have to be careful because obviously some of the services we use are legal requirements. So for example, you don't want to be setting up a fake profile for the ATO. But when you're dealing with registration for your new smart TV, for example, or your new games console, you may not want to run the risk of your personal details being stolen. Now, again, we have to be careful because if it's linked to financial details, so for example, if you are using a games console and you're setting it up to do electronic transactions, to buy games, for example, then you will obviously have to use your legitimate details. But if it's a rather innocuous service, maybe it's registering that new digital robotic vacuum cleaner that you got at Christmas, then it probably doesn't need to know your real details. So having an alternate identity may be useful. And that can be extended not just to using either a variation or a fabricated name, but it could also include an address, for example. So many services won't let you register them unless you put in a correct address because they'll look them up. And there are websites that will support you in finding a complete set of valid details but that are not your identity. And that can go even to the extremes of creating temporary usernames. So you could have an email address that's valid for 10 minutes or an hour to allow you to do a product registration without the fear of all that spam mail coming your way.
Yeah, right. So we've talked about personal responsibilities and things that we can do to protect ourselves from, cybercrime. But what sorts of safeguards would you recommend to parents when teaching their kids about using their new smart devices safely?
So most of the time, it just relates to common sense advice. So starting off with that issue over passwords, children are just as likely to have their accounts compromised as anybody else. Their accounts are just accounts. They're not differentiated in the systems that get compromised. So making sure that they follow the same safe practices. But children are often a little bit more vulnerable because perhaps they're not thinking through the consequences very carefully. They're not aware of all the cyber threats that might be out there. So just making them think a little bit about how they use their systems. So again, I'll give a personal example. I set my children up with Apple accounts recently to enable their iPads to have a separate identity. And I utilize the family sharing functionality. And there are similar functions in Google platforms for the Android operating system and for many other kinds of devices that will allow us to manage our children's devices, giving them a bit of freedom and flexibility, but having the ability to oversight and even veto certain things. So I can control, for example, in Messenger, whether my children can talk to other individuals and go through an approval process so I can validate who they're communicating with. And when it comes to apps, you can prevent in-app purchases so they can't run up debts on the parent's credit card, for example.
Oh, yeah. I remember when that was just not a thing at all. And you just heard heaps and heaps of horror stories of kids spending like $2,000, something like crazy amounts like that, just on their parents' credit card and like games and stuff. So that's great.
I think for some $2,000, it would be a welcome relief. There's been some many tens of thousands of incidents.
Oh, yeah. That's like that's a bag of chips compared to other situations. So finally, the world of cybersecurity definitely seems pretty dangerous. And not to mention, I mean, as more and more things move online, we're seeing more and more stories of cybercrime. So how worried should we be about our data being stolen?
So, unfortunately, data is stolen at a tremendous rate. I gave the example earlier of password leaks or credential leaks. There's over 10 billion sets of credentials currently available online. And if listeners want to check, see whether they're part of those leaked data sets, and it won't check everything, but there are 10 billion to check through, there is a very good website called Have I Been Pwned, PWNED. Just do a quick Google search for that, and that will allow you to put in your email address, and it will give you an indication of which websites your data was leaked from or which services it was leaked from. And I think that's always a good starting point. For the average user, the sites you're visiting are probably not going to be compromised, but it can happen. And another good example was LinkedIn from a few years ago. The entire database of users from LinkedIn got extracted and was put up online for anyone to access. So it can happen on any website. So having those safeguards and making sure that one leak doesn't lead to another by having those unique details just helps to give you that little bit of protection. And just thinking about the data that you share with these organizations, do we really need to share so much of our lives on social media and providing the same information to multiple websites that can then be used to identify us, so that if it does end up in the hands of the criminals, the damage they can do is much less.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you.